They used to be called the one-armed bandits. Slide in the coin, pull the lever, and test your luck. These days, so-called slot machines run on reloadable debit cards and the touch of your finger. They and games like video poker are expected to be a huge hit at the new Hollywood casino that opens for business today on Columbus's west side. It's a third of four casinos to open in the state. Unlike the gambling, nothing in a casino is left to chance. Everything from the architecture to the aesthetics are planned with almost scientific accuracy to pull you into the maze of lights and sounds, and so you spend a lot of time and money amid them. Coming up, we'll talk with MIT cultural anthropologist Natasha Dowshall about her new book, Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas, which examines how the machines work. Right now, we welcome Laura Clemens from the Responsible Gaming Program. She's the Responsible Gaming Program Coordinator for the Ohio Casino Control Commission. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you, Ann.
Hollywood Casino Columbus officials were not available to join us due to the opening ceremonies this morning. We also invited a representative from the American Gaming Association. They did not respond to our requests. Question for listeners this hour. Have you ever used the so-called slot machine before? Are you familiar with the so-called machine zone? Give us a call and share your experience, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Laura Clemens, how much do you know about how a casino and the machines inside a casino work to pull in the players and keep them there?
Well, my responsibility is not necessarily how machines work or how they entice people. I do know that we have some pretty tough standards here in Ohio. The casino law requires an 85% payout. So we do know that 85% of the time you're a winner, 15% of the time you're a loser. But the important thing to remember is the house always wins. You know, don't go in thinking, you're always going to win. And that's important.
The American Gaming Association has a code of conduct for responsible gaming that Penn National, the owner of the Hollywood Casino, does adhere to, or says it adheres to. Why is a code of conduct necessary? What does it do?
It's important to have a code of conduct. That ensures the integrity of casino gambling in Ohio, and that's something that's very important. And they do have to submit a responsible gambling plan to the Casino Control Commission for approval before they're issued their license. They did do that here, and it is based off of that code of conduct.
And you said that Ohio has very strict laws. How do they differ from other states? What distinguishes Ohio's regulation of gaming?
Well, I think what you'll find is that nothing's really new anymore in gambling jurisdictions. So we tried to take the best practices from other jurisdictions that already have casino gambling. And then it's our enforcement piece of this that is very strong. And our commitment to responsible gambling is also something that's unique. So Ohio was in a unique position where we had to get up and running very quickly. We're the only jurisdiction in the country that opened two casinos within 2 weeks of each other and three casinos within just months of each other. So we pulled together a great team from across the country who came to help us, who had experience in other jurisdictions, and put together our rules and license these casinos in a very, very short period of time.
So you're not exactly an old hat at it, but you've been around the bend a few times now. What have you learned, or has anything much happened yet that would have taught the taught your organization much about what you're doing?
About regulating casinos in
yes.
general? Sure. We've, now had the experience of Cleveland and Toledo being open. So we're getting a better sense of the enforcement piece of it. There's already been some indictments for gambling crimes up in Cleveland and Toledo. And we know what to look for now. We know what to look for in surveillance. We know how we have a better sense in working with local law enforcement, and our enforcement division has done a great job in creating those relationships with local law enforcement as well as state law enforcement. And then, you know, just working with the operators and establishing that relationship.
I know that the Ohio Department of Drug Addiction, ODADAS, is being given some money to work on problem gambling or gambling addiction. What role does your organization, does the Ohio Casino Control Commission play in terms of problem gambling / gambling addiction?
Well, that's right, Anne. 2% of the casino gross revenue tax is dedicated to the problem gambling and addiction services fund that's administered by the Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services. And my role is the problem gambling program coordinator. So I work hand in hand with ODATIS, with the Ohio Lottery Commission, who's also a vital partner in this, and with the Racing Commission to make sure that we have programs in place to deal with not only the problem gambler, but also in our prevention efforts. Because we know that we're going to see more instances of problem gambling just because of the proximity. So what we're trying to do is strengthen the programs we do have, look where those gaps are, and come up with some effective programs.
One of the programs, or one of the things that the Ohio Casino Control Commission does allow, is for problem gamblers to voluntarily put themselves on a list that bars them from entering a casino. How does that work?
I'm really glad you asked about that. The Voluntary Exclusion Program is a program that allows a person to voluntarily exclude themselves from a casino for a period of 1 year, 5 years, or a lifetime. And what they do is they contact either the Casino Control Commission, and lots of times it happens just right here in the casino, and we have agents on staff who can sign them up right there. It's a confidential program, and they do have to fill out a form that allows us to just make sure that they are doing it voluntarily, that, you know, a spouse or a family member is not coercing them to sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're on this list, so to speak, you are barred from entering the casino. And then if you are caught in the casino, you're asked to leave. You could be charged with trespassing if you do happen to get to any winnings. Those winnings are confiscated and deposited into the Problem Gambling and Addiction Services Fund. So it's not going to cure problem gambling, but it is another tool for a person to use. You know, they can just say, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm not allowed in anymore. And it's been a very successful program. We have about 110 people who've already signed up for it. And it's, you know, like I said, it's just something that mm-hmm. the problem gambler can do for themselves.
Any trespassers yet?
We have, yes. We have not charged anybody with trespassing. We've asked them to leave the casino. What we'll do is, if somebody doesn't leave voluntarily or becomes a little bit unruly, then we'll do the trespassing. Or if they repeatedly come back in and try to gamble, then we'll charge.
But it's all up to the discretion of the Ohio Casino Control Commission?
Correct. Okay. Our gaming agents
and
are
on
site.
And who's your enforcement arm?
We have, in Cleveland and Toledo, we use BCI.
Okay.
The Bureau of Criminal Investigation.
Under the Attorney General's office.
At the Attorney General's office. Mm-hmm. They are our gaming agents. And essentially, the gaming agents are our police force inside the casino. They are in the casinos 24/7.
And what about in Columbus?
In Columbus, we have the gaming agents under the jurisdiction of the Casino Control Commission. This is the first group that are actually commission employees.
Why the difference? Why one group for one casino and another for another?
Eventually, they're all going to become commission employees. But at the beginning, as you recall, I said we had to get up and running very, very quickly. And so the commission looked to the Attorney General for assistance. And we have a memorandum of understanding for the BCI agent.
Do you have any sense? You said it's been working pretty well, but do you know how what sort of what your expectations are for success and how you measure success, I guess I should say?
No, we measure success, I suppose, by numbers is just part of it, but how many people we actually are able to stop from entering the casino, people with problem gambling. In another state, they've had this program up for almost 2 years, and they just reached 100 people. We've reached 100 people in just a matter of months. So a lot of it is going to be how well we promote this and make people aware of it. But really, it's up to the individual about how successful it's going to be. You know, it is voluntary, and it's really up to them. It's kind of a contract that they have with us not to enter.
Joining us now is MIT cultural anthropologist Natasha Dow Scholl. She's studied how the gaming industry has innovated machine gambling to a science, making it the most popular, profitable, and addictive form of wagering. Her book is called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Natasha. Hello, Natasha. Oh, okay. We're going to have to recheck our connection with Natasha and get back with her. Laura Clemens, information for gambling addiction help can be found almost any place casino information or promotion is found online, and billboards and so forth. What about in the casinos?
In the casinos, on every ATM machine and on every ticket redemption machine, on every brochure that they have out, is our helpline number. And that number is 1-800-589-9966. You walk around the casino and you see it everywhere. People can call that number and just get referral services. They could maybe just ask about the voluntary exclusion program. It's a very, very comprehensive helpline that's dedicated to gambling.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Laura Clemens.
Thank you, Ann.
You're on your way over to the casino now?
I am. We're going to cut the ribbon.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Ribbon cutting. That's Laura Clemens. She is with the Ohio Casinos Control Commission, and she is the responsible gaming program coordinator there. Coming up, we'll be talking with Natasha Dow Scholl, author of Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The Bible tells us God created man in his own image and started with Adam. Modern scientists, even many Christian ones, say
that would be against all the genomics evidence that we've assembled over the last 20 years.
I'm Neil Conan, Science and the Religious Divide over Adam and Eve. Plus one cellist's nightmare, flying coach. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 39 degrees in downtown Columbus, some sunshine today and a high of 58. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37. Sunshine and a high of 63 on Tuesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Home Care Assistance, in-home care for older adults with a philosophy of promoting health, well-being, and quality of life for all clients, no matter their limitations. Information on Home Care Assistance is at 481-8888. That's 481-8888. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. A study released last week by the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services estimated Ohio's at-risk and problem gambling rate to be 2.8%, about the national average. That translates to about 250,000 adults in Ohio. The Hollywood Casino in Columbus opens today, in just a few minutes, actually, and officials expect some 20,000 visitors in just the next 24 hours. How many among them are or will become addicts, and how does that work? Joining us now is MIT cultural anthropologist Natasha Dow Scholl, who has studied how the gaming industry has innovated machine gambling to a science, making it the most popular, profitable, and addictive form of wagering. Her new book on the topic is called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. Welcome to the show, Natasha.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Stacey Fronapple-Hassan. She is with the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Thank you.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to join the conversation, do you get what we're talking about when we talk about that machine zone? Give us a call, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Natasha, we were talking earlier with someone from the Control Commission, and she mentioned that one of the things they do is make sure that the casinos put out and make good on the 85% payout, which means that 85% of the time you're winning. But when it comes to an addict, what I thought was one of the most fascinating things about your book is that people really don't care if they win or lose when they're an addict, when they're a gambling addict.
Yeah, it may start out being about the thrill of winning. That may draw people to machines, that kind of little excitement and the thrill. And in the beginning, what may hook you in is experiencing a win because you try to get it again and again. But pretty rapidly, when you interact with these machines over and over and over again repetitively, you learn that they do something else for you. And the way that gamblers describe this to me is this idea of the zone or the machine zone. And that's what they end up playing for. So they kept telling me, the gamblers I talked to, you're not playing for money. You're playing just for credits so you can sit there longer, that it's not about winning. It's about continuing to play. And if they do win, they're not leaving the machine and taking those winnings home. They see it as more credits to keep playing.
It's also surprising how self-aware people are about that.
Yeah, I was really struck with that, just how articulate people are. They see what they're doing, but it doesn't help them to stop it. These were not dupes that I was talking to. It wasn't like, oh, these you know, stupid people, why should we help them? They're choosing to spend their money in this way. The rest of us can behave more responsibly. It wasn't that at all. These were very savvy people. Some of them, in fact, even helped to design these machines. They were slot machine mechanics, you know, who by day they would work inside the machine fixing them. And then on their lunch breaks and overnight, they would go and play these machines, even though they knew how they worked.
Right now, people are lined up outside the Hollywood Casino. Natasha, I'm assuming you've never been there, but in general, what can they expect from a typical casino?
Well, the whole industry today, and this is something that the gambling industry itself readily admits, is driven by the technology, specifically the slot machines. And that's why gambling is coming to all of these new places and why states are so eager to introduce it. Really what's making the money is the slot machines. So that's what my work focuses on, is that particular kind of gambling. It's not the poker table in the basement, you know, with your friends on the weekend, or even a sports betting pool. It's a highly designed and formatted experience in question here.
It's always been a big part of the casino experience, because that's what you hear as soon as you walk in.
Right. You hear the clinging and the clanging. Those sounds have actually changed over time as the approach to designing slot machines has become more scientific. People, just to give
listeners an idea of the kind of thought that goes into those sounds that they hear when they walk in. During my research, I learned of one manager of a slot machine design company who decided that all the sounds of the machines needed to be in the tone of C, because this was a very pleasant tone that was likely to keep people gambling and not clash with the other tones. So a lot of thought goes into the sounds that you hear when you walk into a casino.
A lot of science.
Well, I hesitate actually to call it science.
Okay.
Because really it's more of a pragmatic approach. And I kept asking people, you know, do you hire experts? Do you think this out ahead of time? Are you reading psychology? And they said, we don't need to do that because basically the whole casino is our laboratory. We put stuff out there and we quickly learn what works and what doesn't work. The stuff that works rises to the top and we don't really care why. You know, it's about our bottom line.
So I guess really Stacy from Apple Hats, and then it's about what we can learn about ourselves from the casinos themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Stacy?
That's exactly true. And what we're finding is, like any what we call process addictions, these addictions will build. So Ohio has been, I would say, very proactive in preparing for what will become a serious problem gambling issue within the state.
How do you, when there's drugs, there's a withdrawal often from a person who's addicted to a drug. Is there the same sort of withdrawal from somebody who's addicted to machine gambling? Is there a physiological manifestation of it that way?
To some extent, yes. There's going to be irritability. There's going to be this restlessness. Certainly, the individual will look for any way possible to get back there. And that involves, you know, borrowing money or potentially selling things, hitting up friends and family, whatever it takes, just like any other addiction.
Natasha, how big of a difference does it make that you can just slide your debit card into the machine now versus having to take that unwieldy roll of quarters or nickels and put them into the slot?
Well, that's one of the ways in which this particular form of gambling has become increasingly mediated by other advances in technology to make it better, or you could see it as making it more potent. So if the gambling industry wants you to gamble longer and faster and more intensely, and you yourself, as a, say, in the case of an addict, want to sit there and gamble longer as well, things like financial technologies really, really help that. So, you know, it used to be that you'd think about a gambler who ran out of money while they were playing back in the 80s. They'd have to leave the machine, go to an ATM, get out money, then they'd have to go to a cash cage or find somebody walking around with a coin cart, buy the roll of coins, go back to the machine, open it up, and then put them in one by one. That was an incredibly time and energy-consuming process that really slowed things down, and it gave you a lot of chances to stop, to actually pause, reflect on what you were doing, and maybe, you know, head home. The financial access technologies that we see now on machines, where you're playing with a player card, you often, if you go into a casino, it's a common sight to see rows of people who look like they're actually plugged into the machines because they've got those bungee cords going from the cards that are hanging around their necks right into the machine. So they're just playing directly off of their credit. You know, it started with bill acceptors where you'd put in a $20 bill and then play off your credits. And now today we see, you know, ticket in, ticket out technology and these player cards.
And also they play by the penny.
Yes, and that's really counterintuitive because the industry itself was really surprised by that development because they thought back, you know, in the 90s, even till around 2000, you still heard, nickel machines, those, you just find those in the grind joints. It was kind of like a joke of the industry. Everyone thought we were going to move from quarters to dollars and higher. But in fact, we've seen a return to not only nickels, but pennies, and in some cases, even half a penny. And those machines are making actually more than the higher denomination machines, which it's kind of hard to understand how. It has to do with, if you walk into a casino today, you're not going to see the typical one-armed bandit that has three symbols lining up across one line. You're going to see these video screens that are packed with symbols, many lines and rows of symbols. So what they've done is they've taken your bet and they've fragmented it so you can bet on many lines in each hand.
Oh, okay.
So you're betting penny per line, but you may be betting 300 pennies a hand.
Kind of like a bunch of bingo cards?
Exactly. You could see it that way.
Okay.
Or even the scratch lottery tickets.
Right, right. Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The Hollywood Casino opens today. Actually, it opened 2 minutes ago or something like that in west side of the city. If you want to join the conversation, we would love to hear. If you know what we're talking about, we talk about the machine zone. Have you played the slots machine? Have you played gambling machines before? And you know what we're talking about when we say the machine zone. Give us a call and share your story, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page. You can also tweet me at WOSU All Sides. Still with us, Stacy Fronapple-Hassan of the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services, and by phone, Natasha Dow-Scholl, author and cultural anthropologist and associate professor at MIT. Stacy, how much money has the state provided to the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services to combat the problem gambling issue?
What we've had to work with so far, and it's come through the Lottery Commission and lottery ticket sales, has been $335,000 a year, and that's been for the last 10 years. That has paid for workforce development training so that we have counselors prepared to identify and treat problem gambling, an annual conference, and six problem gambling identification and treatment sites around the state, which have luckily corresponded with where the casinos—
Just happened to have corresponded.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, a fair guess that that was where gambling was going to pick up.
Big cities.
Right. And certainly along the borders, Lucas County, Cuyahoga, and Cincinnati area, we knew that there were casinos fairly close by across the borders. So those have been up and running for a decade, and we're just starting to receive funds from the 2% on the tax from the casinos. But that's obviously very early in its process.
And it's a function of how much they generate.
That's correct. So our first drop, basically, from that amount was $395,000. So it's still a drop in the bucket, to continue that phraseology. But we have every reason to believe that that will eventually become millions, which we can then use primarily to prevent this issue and treat problem gamblers.
Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Oh, hi. I just want to make a comment. I actually am a neuroscientist. I won't go into detail about what my aspect is, just but I do a lot of I've done a lot of research on this, and I actually lived in Reno before I lived here. And my next door neighbor was a software programmer for IGT, which is one of the big slot machine makers, and they absolutely use neuroscientists to program. The pleasure chemical is dopamine that your body releases. You probably heard that when people talk about cocaine addiction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get a little jackpot, there's a dopamine release. And they time the jackpot winnings. And the frontal part of your brain is the part that makes all the decisions,
mm-hmm.
judgment, everything. And your central limbic system is kind of the, people call it the devil's playground, whatever, the emotional circuits are all in there. The timing of the dopamine, when you really get involved in your limbic system, you cut off, they've done functional neuroimaging on this, you actually cut off the connections of any input from your judgment center. Now, I'm not talking about the first time you go play gambling, but when you get addicted, and it's very, very easy to get addicted to these machines. They used to take 4 to 5 years for people to really get addicted to card, you know, table games,
mm-hmm.
things like that. People can become seriously addicted in 6 to 8 months, and they have timed it. If they do everything they can to facilitate you still playing. A friend of mine works in the casino in Reno. They call it playing the player to extinction.
Right.
It sounds kind of drastic, but it's financial extinction. They will facilitate loans, everything. And another girlfriend of mine is a bankruptcy attorney there, and people come in losing their houses. It is a real slippery slope, and I think it's a real mistake that they even I mean, I think it should be a free country. Everyone should be able to do what they want to do, but there is real lack of public understanding of how dangerous and how easy and destructive it is to become addicted to gambling. People should just Google suicide and gambling, and they'll get a whole page of really, really sobering stories.
Anne, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest, Stacey Fronapple-Hassan. She's with the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services, and also Natasha Del Shull, author of Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. So what have you seen, Stacey, so far with the two other casinos open in Toledo and Cleveland? We know you've about doubled your take in funding, but what about the demand for your services?
The calls to the helpline have increased, and that is just an early indicator of people with concerns about their own activity as well as the activity of their loved ones, family members, and friends. We have not seen a growth in treatment issues. Folks won't come for treatment. The last caller said 8 or 9 months. In terms of actually taking that step to where you would go to treatment, it's more around 3 years before we start to see that wave of increased need for treatment, which is why we'll be focusing primarily on prevention and education up front. But we know, because of the helpline calls being increased, that this is already a growing issue, and we can only make sure that we're ready for it as it hits the state.
According to a researcher at the University of Illinois, studies have indicated that for every $50 of economic benefit, there is $300 of social cost. A lot of it is less obvious. It's not like the cost to you at the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services. It's things like bankruptcies, foreclosures, divorces, drunk driving problems, suicides. How do you compete with that from where you sit, Stacey?
I think that is why we have to focus on prevention and education. One of the things that we found with the survey that we just completed was that 18 to 24 year olds are twice as likely to have problem gambling issues. So we know that we have to focus our prevention and education efforts on those younger people, as well as parents and other caring adults who can pay attention to those warning signs. Our initial year of kind of startup with this, whatever ends up being in our fund from the 2% tax on the casinos, 60% of that will be focused on prevention and education in a statewide campaign. And we'll be doing that with our partners in the ORG organization, Casino Commission, Lottery Commission, and Racing Commission. Those folks have obviously a hands-on perspective in terms of what gambling means to the state of Ohio. And my State Department brings that prevention and treatment expertise.
Well, Stacey, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
It's been great to be here. Thank you.
Stacey Fronapple-Hassan, she is Chief of Communications for the Ohio Department of Alcohol and Drug Addiction Services. Still with us, Natasha Del Shull. She's author and cultural anthropologist and associate professor at MIT. We'll return after this. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team.
Two giant Caterpillar machines sit on concrete rubble and batter the 77-year-old dam that stretches across the Olentangy.
What we're going to see is a huge improvement in habitat quality. You're going to see fish moving upstream.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour two of All Sides begins, and it's the history of jazz in the Buckeye State. Stay with us for hour two of the show from 11 till noon. And time is running out for you to support our station and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins soon. And by making your pledge right now, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad. No pledge is necessary. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. Thank you for your support of 89.7 NPR News. 45 degrees with a mix of sun and clouds, warming up to 58 degrees today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 37. Sunshine and a high of 63 on Tuesday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hollywood comes to Columbus. The new Hollywood Casino opens for business today on the city's west side. The ribbon cutting occurred a little over 10 minutes ago now. One of the biggest draws? Video gaming. Everything from slots to poker and maybe even the Wheel of Fortune. Those kinds of games are now the largest source of income for most casinos. So how do they do it when some of the bets are as little as a penny? MIT cultural anthropologist Natasha Dow Scholl has written an entire book on it. It's called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. It examines how these machines lure people in and make them forget about everything around them. She's our guest today. Once again, Natasha, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
At Gamblers Anonymous meetings you've attended, most of the participants were addicted to machines, not the card games or the roulette table. When you say most of, I mean, what are we talking about there? All or...
Well, when I started this research and going to Gamblers Anonymous meetings in the 90s, at that time it was about 95% of people in the room played, and that really struck me. You know, I kind of went to see what was going on at Gamblers Anonymous meetings in Las Vegas, and I came away thinking, my God, this is really about the machines. I have to learn more about how these machines work.
That's how you got interested in the first place then?
Yeah, that's what hooked me in, was just being so struck by what I was hearing in the Gamblers Anonymous meetings. I was expecting to find, you know, sports bettors and poker players, et cetera, and you did find those in there, but far and few between. It was really about video poker, the slot machines. Also, if you went to local casinos, that's what you would see, these massive, let's call them slot barns, which are getting you know, upwards of 90% of their revenue from the slot machine.
We've talked a little bit about it, that trance-like state of the zone when the aim isn't to win but to continue playing. It's like just getting another hit.
Yeah, it's just being absorbed and getting into a rhythm. You know, I have a quote in my book from an industry game designer who said, you know, our best customers are not interested in entertainment and excitement. They want to be totally absorbed and just get into that zone.
So what is your sense about what everything else is about then? If they make most of their money from the slots, there's all the lights and the colors and the mirrors and the shows and the food and the restaurants and the, you know, the big shrimp bars and everything. What's all that about then if they can just slap down some machines and get enough people hooked?
Well, I mean, there's also the, if you're going to bring in gambling to create jobs, which is often how it's pitched, you're going to need up front to have the construction jobs and make a claim that there's other kinds of things that are going on there, the sort of destination resort model. And, you know, a significant portion of revenue does come from those other things, from the wining and the dining and the even the movie theaters and things like this. But the real bread and butter underneath that continues to be the slot machines. But I don't think the public would so readily you know, approve of bringing these machines into their communities if it was presented as just laying down the slot machines. So,
kind of like a crack house.
Yeah. I mean, you could see it that way. And these have been called the crack. I mean, I find that a kind of sensationalist metaphor. But the reason that people use that metaphor to begin with, calling video gambling the crack cocaine of gambling, has to do with the speed and the repetition and the intensity of this form of play compared to others. So just like, you know, it takes longer to get addicted to cocaine than to crack, it does, as one of the callers pointed out before, it's much quicker to become addicted to these machines. Studies have been done and repeated showing that it takes 1 year instead of 3.5 years, like other forms of gambling. And that has to do with the speed and the repetition and the continuity.
My guest is Natasha Dow-Scholl. She's author of Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can go to our Facebook page. You can also tweet us at WOSU All Sides, and you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What is the role of ordinary video games in this equation? You know, our growing familiarity with screen-based interaction of video games on PCs, well, on our smartphones, more than anything now.
Well, I think that's the larger cultural context that interests me as an anthropologist, is that you have to see the rise of the slot machine, the modern video slot machine, in the context of this growing consumer familiarity with screen-based kinds of technological interaction, whether it's growing comfort with ATMs to iPhones to all the apps we play on our iPhones to home computers, etc. So much these days of our everyday interactions are mediated by these little technologies that it makes sense that gambling has headed in that same direction. And what that's meant is that it's given the designers of the gambling medium a real chance to format that medium in ways that it's hard to format, a poker game around a table that has real constraints on what you can, how you can tweak it, to change people's experience. Not so with the technology.
And to what extent does it matter that in a poker game around a table you have human interaction?
Well, that would be what's called, the social cues. That are sort of interrupting your flow. It's harder to get in the zone because there are other human beings. You have to think about them. You actually have to wait for them, right? You've got to wait for the dealer to shuffle, other people to make up their mind. And it's even the same thinking about a horse race. You've got to wait for the horses to run, wait for the weekly draw of the lottery. And this gets back to the speed, where in front of a machine, you're playing up to 1,200 hands per hour if you're going at high speed on these machines. So you're not waiting for anybody or anything. I mean, there's no one interrupting you there and making you think about what you're doing.
There's one aspect, it's a term that you use in one of your handouts. It says losses disguised as wins.
Right. That's not my term. It's the term that
okay.
Kevin Harrigan, a researcher in Canada, where they also have a lot of these machines and a lot of problems with these machines, has come up with. And I think that really strikes a chord with people when they try to understand how do these new multi-line machines work, these penny machines. And so losses disguised as wins is basically, you're betting 100 coins, and you're winning 75 back. You're betting 75, you're winning 35 back. Every time you're winning a portion back, and the machine gives you the cues as if you're winning. So you get the same response from the machine, the same kind of music. There's no like total silence of a loss, nor is there the total explosion of a jackpot. It's this steady partial winning. And it really helps you to get into the zone because it doesn't interrupt you the way a large jackpot would, or it kind of keeps you going. It's a slow, steady drip feed is what it's called.
It was interesting to read that even when people get jackpots, it kind of ticks them off because it slows them down.
Yeah, that really drove home for me this idea that it stops being about winning, because a couple gamblers would say to me, it's strange. And they thought it was strange, too. They said, it's really weird, but I thought I was playing this, or I started playing it to win, but now winning really irritates me. It really disappoints me. The one woman who talked to me, she still played on coin machines. And what winning meant was that she had to wait for the attendant to come over and fill the hopper if all the coins were out. So that just stopped her flow. And she said, I would just get really irritated, and I'd just move to the next machine over and start playing.
What about we had the caller earlier, the neurophysicist, neurologist. Anyway, she was talking about the dopamine function And I think what she was trying to get at was when you do get a payout, they time it exactly for how long it'll take for you to run out of that dopamine hit from winning.
Well, I was really interested to hear that phone call. I'd love to talk more to that person because it sounds like she maybe learned something that I didn't learn. But I, you know, in my 20 years of doing this, never actually found that neuroscientists were being brought in to design these games. I think these games illuminate how our brains work, and we can explain it using neuroscience. But to my mind, they don't need the neuroscientists to design the machine. Again, they're just trying to increase the bottom line, and they're trying all sorts of different things. And the potent, compelling machines that rise to the surface and become the money makers are the ones that happen to time it according to what our reward system finds compelling. But what she was getting at is that this is not like buying a pair of shoes or buying a book in a bookstore. It's not that kind of consumer purchase. This is this incredibly tight interactive feedback loop just between you and this machine. And of course, it's affecting your brain. It's intimately affecting your experience and shifting your capacity to make judgment. You know, if you're playing 1,200 hands an hour and you're two hours in, can you really say that you're a freely choosing consumer when you're rapidly pressing that button to play again? So I see this really as a consumer protection issue, and I think the first step in the conversation should be for legislators and the public to learn more about how this affects us, our brains, our experience.
You know, one thing I didn't ask early on with Laura Clemens from the Responsible Gaming Program for the Ohio Casino Control was whether or not they post these warnings actually on the machines themselves, not on the body of the machine, but actually in the machine image or images on the machines.
They don't in the U.S. Other countries have taken different directions. I know this big report just came out.
Like if you've been here for 2 days or more, you probably have a problem.
Right. In Australia, they've tried all sorts of different things, like flashing, you know, you've been sitting here for 3 hours straight, maybe you should take a break, or even freezing up the machine. And then there's long debates that people have over how should these messages appear? Is it better for them to scroll from top to bottom? Should they come and scroll from the side? Should they flash? So there's these really robust conversations in other countries about that. No, not here. I mean, you know, 2,000-page tome of policy report by the Australian government just came out. And it's not just about flashing messages. It's also about how to actually change the machine's play. For example, if we know that speed is a problem, should we think about slowing down how fast the reels spin? And then there are these long conversations. Should they spin at 3.14 seconds or 2.8 seconds? And at that point, it is a little bit of a technological fix kind of approach, and I'm not convinced that that's the way to go, but I am convinced that it's valuable to think about how we might want to better regulate these machines, you know, whether it's by putting signs on them or restricting access to them. I'm not sure what those measures should be, but I think we need to learn how the machine works and start having that conversation.
Of course, what could possibly be the motivation for the gambling companies? It's something like maybe problem gamblers, if you want to call them that, make up a little over 2% of all gamblers. But in the terms of revenue, they make up anywhere from 30% to 60% of total gambling revenues.
Yeah, we always hear this 1% to 2%, which not everyone agrees with, but a lot of people do. And what they don't count is that even the studies that show 1% to 2%. Also show that 3% to 4% gamble problematically. So the 1% to 2% is really this extreme pathological gambling diagnosis. So if you've got 3% to 4% plus the 1% to 2%, that still seems like a low number, but that's in the general population. If you consider how many people gamble problematically among those who actually gamble and go to casinos, a number of studies have indicated that it's more like 20%. And then, as you say, if you look at where the revenue is coming from, so much of it is coming from people who are gambling problematically. So, you know, this is not a small and insignificant select minority of gamblers that we're talking about here when we're talking about problem gambling.
We have an email from Sue. She writes, replace the word gambling with cocaine or heroin in the discussion you've been having this morning, and it is surprising that Ohio residents even allowed such an activity to be legalized here. I am not for legalizing marijuana, but that drug seems very mild indeed compared to the dangers of the drug of gambling. Do you think this is because of lack of education or just social programming? Any thoughts about that? I mean, in other words, Natasha Scholl, when you talk to addicts, gambling addicts, they didn't start out thinking they'd become an addict.
No, I mean, I think the public perception is that, oh, these are real degenerate people and they're people who are probably addicts of other substances and things as well. And in fact, so many of the people I talked to said to me, you know, I never had that addictive personality. I never thought of myself that way. I never behaved this irresponsibly before. It just kind of hit me, and then here I am. These were bankers. These were school teachers. These were nurses, waitresses. Something about the gambling really, really pulled them in and just, you know, turned their lives upside down.
Yeah, we've heard about the functioning alcoholic, and whether or not that is a true state of being or not, I guess is debatable. But is there such a thing as a functioning gambling addict?
Well, I can say that I met a few that would count as that. But what you've got to understand is that with alcohol or even heroin, there's a limit that your body can take mm-hmm. before you pass out. If you have what the gambling takes is money, and so as long as you have money, theoretically you can sit there and keep going. So there's a weird way in which, even though this is not some scary substance you're injecting or taking into your body, when you think about the behavior, you can just stay there for hours and days. It's frightening.
Well, Natasha Dow Scholl, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you.
Natasha Dow Scholl, she is the author of a new book. It's called Addiction by Design, Machine Gambling in Las Vegas. Thanks for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.